Geekville Radio.
Hello there.
Well, I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, fellow geeks and geekettes, but it's just kind of been a rather light news week. I really don't know. There's a little bit we got to talk about here. I will talk about some G.I. Joe, some news coming through still about Crisis on Infinite Earths, but the long-rumored Obi-Wan series, it's actually happening, folks, and we got the... Haven't gotten the official word. We're probably going to get that at D23, and we'll kick off with that. But joining me as usual for this edition of Geekville Radio, my good friend in the nice soft padded cell in the asylum in South Kakalaki, Crazy Train Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when you told me about this breaking news and how, you know, D23 is probably going to be where the official announcement's made, it made me wonder. As we as comic book geeks, are we going to start seeing less and less stuff dropped at Comic-Con and more there since Disney like owns, what, 3/4 of all geek properties now?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can get away from Comic-Con because it is such a, you know, it's iconic. But it just made me wonder. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I don't know, this is just me trying to think like a marketer. And Lord knows I was no marketing major, but... You know, San Diego Comic-Con, it is probably the most mainstream thing of geek culture there is, certainly in the States at least, but it's in the name, Comic-Con. So that's probably why they do most of their Marvel releases there. You know, that's where the Marvel news comes out, and D23 is their own thing, and yes, there are Star Wars comics, and pretty much as long as there's been Star Wars, there's been Star Wars comics, except for, you know, the mid-80s, but, you know... Star Wars is kind of thought of, I think, as more than just Comic-Con. You know, now we're obviously getting honest-to-God TV and such. So I think that's probably why they save it for their own convention, because that's it's just, I think, in their eyes, more appropriate to do it there.
Sure. And as you say that, I'm sitting thinking, man, that's sound logic, Seth. And then I realized they debuted Top Gun Maverick at Comic-Con this year, the trailer. So, yeah. That logic just went flying right out the window of the asylum. And I'm like, I was really with you, Seth. And then I had, you know, then I remembered, wait a second.
Right.
You had me convinced for about 30 seconds is what I'm saying.
So we'll get to it here. It's about as mainstream as you can get when Variety reports it. And I'll have the Variety article posted in the show notes here at geekvilleradio.com/242, where you can get all these links if they don't work in the podcaster of your choosing here. Now, we had heard about Obi-Wan Solo, no pun intended, for a number of years now. And there's even articles that I had found, I think, that were like putting, I want to say April of this year as being shooting locations. But what I think happened and what I think is pretty much all but been confirmed is after the debacle that was the Solo movie, I think that kind of put the stoppers, or whatever you want to call it, on any more spinoff movies, because we know that Episode 9 is going to wrap up the Skywalker saga, as they say. There's going to be a few years off because they're going to be regrouping with Rian Johnson and with the Game of Thrones people and such. And so it's probably going to be a few years before we get any Star Wars movies, but it makes sense, kind of like how Disney's doing with some of these things. Like, we'd never get a Hawkeye movie, I don't think, but a Hawkeye TV show we're getting. Maybe they just figured it was a better idea to put Obi-Wan into a series. And really, when you think about it, you can go far more in depth to that. So do you think that's kind of a good way of putting it there, or maybe sound logic as far as doing it as a series instead of a movie?
Yeah, without question. I thought, heck, I've been hearing, what, 5, maybe 7 years, these rumors of an Obi-Wan Solo, you know, once again, no pun intended, standalone film, or maybe a television series. I kind of thought once they did Marvel of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC, which is also owned by Disney, there's a possibility, but I don't know. I think back to, like, you know, Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, which was actually a critical and rating success, but was so damn expensive to make is why it got canceled.
Some of those episodes were amazing, too.
Yeah, I mean, they were movie level stuff, and I'm going, that's what you're. And I'm trying to think, you know, put myself in a businessman, corporate, you know, suit and tie kind of guy at Disney, thinking, you know, bottom line, profit margin and stuff. A show like this would cost us a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, granted, Rogue One did good. I was, you know me, I was the most critical of that movie of all the individuals we've had here on Geekville talk about that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And mine was solely based upon non-Star Wars diehards that were family and friends talking about they either weren't going to go see it because it didn't make any sense to them, or they went and saw it and were like, huh? You know? And so I kind of saw then that kind of verified to me what I thought, which was that this kind of project is probably not going to work in the movie format, and just wait, I'm going to be vindicated. And then Solo came around and I was vindicated, you know?
Right.
And this was the failure of, and we've talked on that one episode about why Solo failed. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of the matter is I did not expect it to fail as astoundingly big as it did with such a beloved character as Han Solo. You know, it was in my mind, that was much less of a roll of the dice than a Rogue One story was, you know?
Right. Right.
But with all that being said, I was like, okay, that eliminates movies. I wasn't sure about TV. I thought with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that's a possibility. But then, I thought about the cost prohibitions of doing a show like that. But then here rolls around the Netflix Marvel series, which, of course, Marvel's also owned by Disney. And we see the critical success of them. We see the commercial success of them. And we saw the quality that went into the production values of these. And so I started to think, maybe Obi-Wan could work now. And then when they announced Disney Plus, I knew right then it's going to happen at some point. It might not happen right out of the gate, but it is going to happen. To refer back to what you say all the time is, for those fans who complained about how much George Lucas bled the Star Wars franchise, once Disney got a hold of it, you ain't seen nothing yet. And it's right. Just logical to realize that a company like Disney is not going to sit on a money-making property like Star Wars. And they're especially not going to sit on a character like Obi-Wan, who is so beloved, not only by hardcores, but by casual, you know, because I think we were talking in you know, pre-production for our listeners, complete transparency. We were talking about how as divisive as the prequels were, which in hindsight is crazy that the new movies are even more divisive. Right. I think that was possible, you know, but regardless it is, but we were both agreeing that as divisive as those prequels were, one of the things almost everybody agreed on was Ewan McGregor was awesome as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the things. And I think you have some news on his involvement in this project, which doesn't surprise you, but back to your original question, that was my mindset, was that maybe not. And then I realized definitely not a movie, but then the combination of the Netflix Marvel stuff and then the announcement, I knew it was a done deal. I just didn't know when it was going to happen, you know?
Right. Right. I think I realized it was probably going to happen around the time I put up the story and links, because it was from a publication. I want to say, I think it was in Ireland or something like that, where it was, I forget the exact thing, and I'll put the link up in the show notes there at geekvilleradio.com/242. But it was from a local Ireland publication that had noticed, okay, George Lucas is here. Why is George Lucas here? You know,
vacation is probably the only thing you can think of at that point, right? It's a
right,
beautiful country. I've been there. I get it.
Right, right. But that it was the that was when it was beginning to leak that, okay, these might be locations for Obi-Wan. Now, because here's the thing about Obi-Wan that I think is very interesting, and then I'll get to more of the harder details here, is obviously probably the bulk of the series would be him on Tatooine. But it doesn't necessarily have to. I mean, there's no rule that says he couldn't have gone off-world for an adventure and then just come back, you know?
Right. I think I had mentioned it one time before we've talked about this and standalone films and what are some of the stories that could be told. There's, you know, it's obvious early on in Attack of the Clones that Obi-Wan has a long relationship with Jax, you know? Mm-hmm. Or Dax, I mean, sorry. And, how did that relationship develop? How did he get to know this non-Jedi diner owner? you know, that owned a diner there on Coruscant. That's a story I wouldn't mind hearing. You know, right. I mean, I'm just spitballing here, folks, but I'm saying that there, Obi-Wan is a character that's been around so for, you know, since New Hope. He's a beloved character, but there's major gaps between when we meet the youngest Obi-Wan we meet is right at the beginning of Phantom Menace. And then, you know, we see him, of course, die at the end of New Hope. And we do see the ghosts throughout the rest of the original trilogy. But if you go from the beginning of Phantom Menace to the end of New Hope, there's a lot of gaps in there where there's story potentials, in my opinion.
Right. Right. Especially when they dangle some of the carrots throughout Clone Wars with the Duchess of Teen and such. A lot of background that could go there as well. But anyway, the interesting thing for me is not just that we're finally getting the confirmation that Ewan's on board. I'm hearing rumors, and I don't think it's on the Variety link, but I've heard rumors that he may actually be directing some episodes of this. So that should show you how gung-ho he is about this. And I always believed that Ewan loved Obi-Wan. He realized the level of honor that portraying this character is. So I think he always held that to heart and always wanted to honor the character in that way. And it's kind of like how, you know, some of the best movies Clint Eastwood does are the ones that he also directs. You know, I think it's that type of vibe
like,
as well.
Like a Gran Torino or Unforgiven or something like
right,
that.
Right, exactly. You know, I think that we're really going to get a accurate portrayal of Obi-Wan in this. And this is without even getting into what the plot could probably be. I mean, we have no idea how we're going to involve a Jedi general in the desert living by himself. How do we make this interesting? Now, I did read the Kenobi book that came out a few years ago. I think it was one of the final ones to come around before the sale, or at least before they announced that all the books and comics and all that weren't canon. And really, it had a very much a space Western feel. It's just Obi-Wan was the stranger that drifted into town. And that's kind of how he was portrayed. And I think we've both seen enough Westerns to get that analogy.
Sure. And obviously, George Lucas had too, because New Hope has a Western vibe. He even admits he was going for a bit of a East meets West. He had the heavy influence from the, you know, the Kurosawa and the Japanese stuff, but he also was influenced by, you know, the John Fords and Howard Hawks type stuff of the 40s and 50s. And he wanted to meld the two, and, well, New Hope's what we got.
Right.
You know, throw a dash of Flash Gordon and other sci-fi in there, but that's what it is, essentially. I think at its core, you and me have talked about before, Star Wars is a space opera. It is a space Western. It is not sci-fi. Star Trek's a sci-fi show, a sci-fi movie. And so I think the Western is, and quite frankly, in my own opinion, this is completely my opinion, ladies and gentlemen, but I think Westerns are such a part of our culture and so iconic to Americans, probably explains why it did so well in the United States. Don't know. And also probably why it did well globally, because Westerns and Western themed entertainment, especially movies and television shows, have been one of those exports from the United States that has caught on in other countries because they see it as uniquely American too, you know? And it's like, I say it's the same vibe. Why did Braveheart do so well in America? Very few Americans know about Scottish history, you know, but there's a mystique to it. And so it was presented to us and we gobbled it up, you know, all historical inaccuracies aside, we gobbled up that movie. And so I think the same thing, but you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on your toes. That was just my thoughts on it being a Western vibe, you know?
Right. Yeah. It absolutely makes sense. And, you know, I know if Mark Short, you know, my co-host for Examining the Doctor here, I mean, he has that infamous quote, I think was in the second episode we did. It's like, anytime you put cowboys in space, it's awesome. You know,
it's one of the five things that makes the world great, like, you know, with like whipped cream and powdered sugar and other things, you know,
because, you know, Han Solo is basically a space cowboy.
Right. I mean, in the video game world for years, it was put zombies in it, it'll sell. And thank God that's kind of died. But you get my point. Well, I had two things I also wanted to add. I've been kind of dominating the talk here, and you're the one that brought this to me. One, to address what you said about Ewan McGregor having such respect for the role and the character. I've heard him openly say in interviews, it's not just the character. He realized he was playing a young version of Sir Alec Guinness. And that was very humbling to him as an actor, you know? So I think some of that's involved too. And then the other one is a question, and you might have to run to the wiki machine for this. Has Ewan McGregor directed anything before, movie or television?
Just shooting from the hip, I don't know. Now, obviously, that doesn't necessarily mean he'd be bad at it. You know,
no, I'm just curious. I'm just curious. Everybody's got to do something. I mean, yeah, Clint Eastwood was known as the, you know, the silent, never said but more than four lines Western star, and then he became one of the most powerful directors in Hollywood. Who would ever thought the kid that played Richie Cunningham and Opie Taylor would become one of the most successful and respected directors in Hollywood? I mean, I understand, right? Everybody's got to start somewhere. Just curious.
Yeah. Well, according to his IMDb page, he does have a movie called American Pastoral from 2016. It looks like it's one of those artsy films.
Like an art house indie type film.
Right. That type of stuff that you see all over the Academy Awards, but you've never heard of it or seen it. You know, it looks like that type of movie. So, you know, so he does at least have experience in feature film. So,
Just curious.
Yeah. So as far as, you know, the space Western, I mean, the Mandalorian absolutely looks like a space Western as well. So I guess that kind of answers the question before I ask it, which is, do we really want two space Western TV shows? I mean, we're fine with it. I'm just, again, going back to the, they don't make the shows for us. They try to make them for the general masses. Yeah. So I think that pretty much wraps up everything I was ready to talk about with Ewan McGregor, except for the thing is, he's also got two more feature film roles coming out. And I think we've talked about them both in some of our other shows. Like, we already knew he was going to be Black Mask in the Birds of Prey film, which is dropping, I think, next year. And then he is also, for the horror vibe, he's in that sequel to The Shining, where he's the adult Dr. Sleep. So in both of these movies coming up, after he's playing one of the greatest good guys of all time in Obi-Wan, he's going to be playing heels in his two big feature film movies. But that's just the sign of a good actor, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, you don't get to see Denzel play a bad guy very often, but who doesn't love Training Day, right?
Right, exactly.
I still think that's the greatest heel turn in the history of Hollywood, but I digress.
it's like definitely up there.
You go and watch that movie, you're like, I did not see that coming.
Now, another movie, this is what we were prepared to talk about before the news broke, because to be honest, I kind of peel back the curtain a little bit. We didn't know for sure whether we were going to get this confirmation or not. It really wasn't until I started seeing the Variety articles and people like Steve Sansweet, who's like the world's biggest,
aficionado?
Diplomat. He's a Star Wars diplomat, I think is probably the best thing to say about Steve Sansweet. You know, he is the largest collector of Star Wars stuff. He's an advisor to Lucasfilm and all that. And he just seems like a diplomat. I think it's probably the best way I could put it. Even he was saying it's happening. So it's just like, yeah, if he's saying it's happening, it's happening. So, but one of the other movie things that I wanted to bring up here, because this is going to be kind of more my shindig than yours, Train, because I know just the couple of years difference between us. I did hear that Paramount was looking at more G.I. Joe movies, kind of going with the Avengers thing of the shared universe. There's talk of doing G.I. Joe, Transformers, and a couple others in a shared universe type thing. And one of the things that they're looking at doing is a standalone Snake Eyes film, because I think it's pretty much across the board Snake Eyes is considered the coolest G.I. Joe of all time. And naturally, that would be the one that you would do the origin story of, kind of like, you know, doing a Wolverine movie for X-Men. If you're going to do one movie about a single X-Men, you know.
And how'd that work out for Fox?
Right.
For that one. Not, right. No offense to the movie. I didn't dislike the movie, but it was weak, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other two were better. The Wolverine and Logan were just better films.
No, Logan's outstanding, you know.
Right.
Just wish we'd have seen Old Man Hulk, but I knew they weren't going to go there because they didn't own Hulk. Marvel did, but I digress.
Right. But what I had seen as far as the casting considerations were Henry Golding, who is most famous for Crazy Rich Asians. It's what put him on the map. And he is he's half Malaysian and half English, I think, just because I'm not an expert in his career, but for me, and I know this is going to make me sound like one of those guys, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm getting political here. I mean, I try to stay politically neutral on the air here. I mean, but the whole gimmick with Snake Eyes is he was part of the Arashikage clan with Storm Shadow and a few others, and the whole thing of the killing of his master, you know, the Hard Master, and that led to the split between him and Storm Shadow. The whole thing is Snake Eyes was the only American to be welcomed into this elite ninja clan. That's the whole gimmick. There's countless other ninja martial arts characters in G.I. Joe who fit the traditional mold. You know, there's Storm Shadow, there's Quick Kick, there's Jinx, who it was played by Elodie Young, who we all enjoyed as Elektra in Daredevil. So there's a lot of these other characters. It's what made Snake Eyes unique, and he was the only American that went through it. So I don't know how they're going to portray it, because, I mean, Henry Golding, you can tell he's got the Asian genes in him. So it's just one of those things. It's kind of like what we were talking about with Iron Fist, you know, about people that wanted an Asian actor cast in that role. It's just like, well, Danny Rand's whole gimmick is he's a white guy that embraces this other culture. Right. So, you know, that's kind of the soapbox I was getting on. Now, naturally, again, they don't make the movies for me. They make them for the general populace. I know that they can't do the accurate origin where Snake Eyes is a Vietnam vet and all that stuff, because he'd be way too old to do that.
But they could do like they did with Punisher and just fast forward it and make him like an Afghani war vet or something.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So you certainly could still do that.
And once again, with Snake Eyes, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not the big G.I. Joe fan. You are. The Vietnam war vet tied into his ties to Asia. Well, Afghanistan's in Asia too. So,
well, there you go. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to go that route. So, you know, I have two questions before you continue going. One, and maybe you're going to answer one of these you might are going to answer. One, have they already done a Snake Eyes? It wasn't an origin, but where he was the central focus on one of these sequels to the original G.I. Joe movie? Or am I wrong in that?
He was front and center in the first two. You know, they had the Rise of Cobra one, and that he was next to possibly Duke. He was the main one, and they had his feud with Storm Shadow on that one. Then the second one that had Rock and Bruce Willis in it. I wouldn't say he was front and center in that, but he definitely was a major player. You know, he was worst a secondary character in that.
And that's going to lead to my second question. And you, like I said, this might already be in the information you want to share. Is The Rock attached to this at all? Is Duke going to have a cameo or anything?
Well, if they're going to honor the previous two movies, they killed Duke in the beginning of the second one. That's the whole beginning. Of course, me as a Duke fan, I'm like, you know, sacrilegious, but
right.
You know, I think it is, I should say.
I know anybody died in G.I. Joe. I thought they shot a gazillion bullets and nobody ever died. But I digress.
You didn't read the comics then, but
no, I didn't. I just remember the TV show when I'd come home from school, and like I said, I'm a few years older than you, so I had already started to become cynical, and I'd watch a gazillion bullets, and you know they always perish. I'm like, really?
Right.
Of course, I bought that crap just 5 years earlier in the A-Team, but
well, there you go. Yeah,
so, I mean, age has a funny thing about 14, 15, didn't it?
So I would imagine with this being an origin film, they'll have that history. They'll have Storm Shadow, and just me and the geek as a geek, as long as they get Zartan shooting him through the throat, I'll be happy. But, you know, that's my critique of it. And that's not to say that I'm going to hate the movie simply because they cast an Asian looking actor in the role. Or,
well,
maybe it's wrong and they're looking at him for Storm Shadow anyway. But I will reserve my judgment until I actually see the film.
They could always do something. I mean, and here's the thing with me. I'm not the I don't have the emotional attachment and the nostalgic attachment to G.I. Joe you do. One of my favorite reveals, we've talked about this before when we talked about the Aquaman film. For a long time, Black Manta was Aquaman in the comics, was Aquaman's villain, him and, you know, Orm, Ocean Master. Those were his two big villains. For the longest time, we didn't know what was underneath that mask of Black Manta. And it wasn't until, what was it, the 70s or 80s? They finally revealed, maybe it was even the 90s. Mm-hmm. And when he takes the helmet off, and it is actually an African descended man underneath the mask. And that great cell in the comic where he's like, you didn't just think it was a name, did you? I mean, they could do something like that. And I would be cool with that. Would you not?
As far as the face reveal or
just the whole idea that, you know, maybe he's an American of Asian origin, because we are the great American melting pot.
Right. And if they were to play it like that, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I mean, they've referred to him as American. The other gimmick with Snake Eyes is that his face was horribly disfigured.
Does ethnicity even matter? Because you can't tell.
Yeah. You know, again, you know, that these are actually valid points here, you know. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, and another thing about it is this is one of those things you could probably get away with casting a lesser known actor, because in the previous movies, they never showed his face. So it was Ray Park in the suit, you know, Darth Maul, you know.
Sure. They want a real life martial artist who could do the stunt work, the fight scenes.
Right. Right. So I think you can see where I'm coming from, because, you know, you gave some very common sense pointers there. It's just like, well, he's American. That doesn't necessarily mean he's, you know, blonde-haired, you know, and all that, you know.
Yes, we understand the whites were still the majority in America, and blacks aren't far behind, but there's still like 20% of the country that isn't black or white, right? They're Asian, they're Native American, they're you know, Pacific Islanders, Latinos, so Asian. I mean, yeah, we are supposed to be the great American melting pot, and I mean, you live in Chicago, you probably see more diversity than I do. And I see a lot where I live here in the South. So,
right. I think the last thing I'll say about this, and maybe they're already going to do it, but the first thing I would do if I had control over this movie is I would give Larry Hama a call, you know, the Marvel and DC comic writer for years. He wrote the G.I. Joe series for years. He has Japanese heritage. He has practiced martial arts most of his life, so he knows this character in and out. I'd call him and make him an advisor on the movie. That's the first thing I would do, but that's just me, and maybe they'll do it.
Well, you know, I was just thinking, with the whole Black Manta thing, to go back to that, ever since then, once it got established in canon that underneath the suit, Black Manta is a man of African descent, I think we've seen with the way comic book movies work nowadays that because they are appealing to the casuals, the non-hardcore fans, whatever they establish as his background is going to kind of become canon, I would think.
Right.
Don't you?
Right.
So if they choose to make him a white man, a black man, an Asian man, maybe a man of mixed race, that's going to become canon, because the vast majority of people are going to see this are not diehard G.I. Joe fans like yourself, and that's just going to be what they know. I mean, as a longtime Batman fan, I'm always having to fight people on the misconceptions that they have about Batman. And I realize, oh, you've only seen the Tim Burton movies, or you've only seen the Christopher Nolan movies. You've never watched the animated series, or you've never read the comic books. You haven't played the video games. You don't know. And that can be frustrating to a hardcore fan like me. But I also try to, you know, I've mellowed in my old age. I've tried to realize they don't know any better. They're basing it on what information they have, and be nice and just smile, and that's cool. And I think any strong character, whether it's Batman or Snake Eyes or whoever you're talking about, if they have, first off, for them to have staying power, they've got to be a good character to begin with. Mm-hmm. Two, no character I can think of that has staying power. When I say staying power, I'm talking about 20 plus years or more. Has only had one writer ever write stories about them. You know, you can go all the way back forever. Yeah, you can talk about, you know, let's use Dracula as an example. Yeah, Bram Stoker created him in, you know, 1898. But how many other actors and writers have portrayed Dracula or written stories about Dracula? Hundreds, you know, and all that becomes part of the mythos of the character. And so I think when you have a long-term character, and Snake Eyes has shown the test of time. If he hadn't, they wouldn't be talking about making a movie of him, 30 years after he was, you know, introduced?
Right. Yeah, almost 40, yeah.
There are going to be many different takes on him, and it's going to be at the whim of the writer, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know? I wish, and this is my advice to our listeners as the grumpy old grandpa me coming out, even though I'm not a grandpa, and I'm hoping my kids don't turn me into anyone anytime soon. But nonetheless, as the older guy, begin to realize that these characters that you get attached to and have a nostalgia for, there's nothing wrong with different interpretations or taking them different avenues. You don't have to like it. It's my argument on the furor that is the current Star Wars world. You know, it's not for me. It's not my Star Wars, but I don't hate on it because somebody else might like it and they have that right, you know?
Right.
And it doesn't make mine better and theirs worse, or mine right and theirs wrong, or theirs right and my wrong. It doesn't. It's just different interpretation. Look, I'm not Tim Burton. Would I have had Batman strap bat dynamite to a thug and chuck him in a sewer grate? No, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and does that diminish my love of Batman any? Nope. For me, Michael Keaton's still the best Batman ever. You know, so there you go.
Right. So two things I can relate to that, and I guess we'll cut to break after that, is it's like when I would tell people that would get upset of all the Legends stuff, that's the stuff in Star Wars that, like we talked about a little bit earlier, that is considered no longer canon. Well, those stories still exist. You know, just like the people about the original versions of Star Wars, well, they still exist. You know, you can still sit and enjoy them. So
they're harder to find. I understand right. that. But right. it doesn't mean they don't exist.
Right. It, you know, nothing's going to take away that they were there, because I still remember reading one of those G.I. Joe comics, and it's like, to me, a perfect example of Snake Eyes. And they were on this Cobra-infested island. It was him, Stalker, Wild Bill. I think they were all in the same chopper that went down. And Stalker and Snake Eyes have the history because they were nom together. And Stalker gets hit. And I think it was Wild Bill said something like, okay, well, if we can get you to a medical facility within the next 6 hours, we might raise your chances to 50-50. So Snake Eyes just walks up. I think Lowlight was with him too, because he had a sharpshooting rifle. So he takes a scope, puts it on a Uzi or something like that, takes a couple of grenades, and then walks off by himself to take on like these 90 Cobra agents that are on this island. And Stalker says, that's not fair. And Wild Bill says, they're going to fight a well-armed ninja with guns and explosives in the middle of the night in the jungle. Does that sound fair to you?
Exactly. That's a good story. What made me realize what I was talking about was being a parent and realizing that my son, to him, the Joker is Heath Ledger. To mm-hmm. me, the Joker is an amalgamation of Jack Nicholson and Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
And they both were really good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they don't make Snake Eyes the BAMF you just described in that awesome story, I don't think you're going to get upset. It's just a new Snake Eyes for a new generation, right?
Right. Right. Safe to say.
So that, I don't think they're going to go that route. I think the whole point, like you said, he's a ninja. They're going to make him a BAMF. Okay. I don't know if he's going to take an Uzi with a high powered scope on it into a jungle. And I mean, what'd you say about 90 Cobra fighters?
Probably.
Maybe, I mean, maybe if they gave the Cobra 10 or 15 more guys, it might've been a fair fight, but 90. Yeah, he can handle that.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive back into Crisis of Infinite Earths that we're going to see in the next few months on CW. This is Geekville Radio, and we will be right back.
Are you looking for a gaming-themed podcast? Then check out You Just Got Fragged. Join host Jared Aubrey and his panel of gaming enthusiasts as they discuss news and accomplishments in the gaming world, and of course, the gripe of the week. That's all at YouJustGotFragged.com. Part of the Wrestling Brethren podcast family.
Attention all Time Lords and ladies. Geekville Radio presents Examining the Doctor, a weekly look at everybody's favorite Time Lord, the Doctor. Join Mark and Seth as they bring their signature blend of knowledge and humor to favorite and not-so-favorite episodes of Doctor Who. From Hartnell to Capaldi, Examining the Doctor provides episode commentaries for classic and current Doctor Who fans alike. Examining the Doctor, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at geekvilleradio.com.
Well, you know, I really got to update that spot, because I should say from Hartnell to Whitaker now, because I'm leaving out an entire Doctor. So that'll be our, obligatory, mandatory Doctor Who reference for the show. So welcome back, folks. We're going to talk the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover, the annual crossover that goes across the Arrowverse shows every year. And I know we talked about it two shows ago, but a lot of stuff has come by since then. So we're basically just going to summarize kind of what we know and what we expect. The news that we have learned since the last episode is we are getting the dates established. And Train, I think you were the one that told me that you are going to see elements of this unfold, probably because we're going to see the monitor, I would assume, in a couple of shows. But you,
right?
You had heard that there are going to be a couple of references that are going to plant the seeds for this, right?
That was my understanding on the article I read, that it will be a crossover in the sense that each one of the story will take place across multiple titles. But the reason that you're hearing this term, multi-month is really, it's not that much. It's just because of the way the scheduling is with the individual episodes. Some will drop in December and some will drop in January. So right. I don't think we're going to see like four or five Supergirls leading into it. Maybe the end of one Supergirl and then one episode and then we're in. Did you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
I think fans are hoping for this. Literally, it consumes all the show's storylines for 3 to 5 episodes each, and that ain't going to happen.
Right.
You know, it's going to be 1 to 2 episodes of each one of the titles, and then we'll be done. Because that's the way they've always done it, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this one, it's going to be 5 episodes. We're going to get an episode of Supergirl in December 8th, Batwoman on December 9th, and then Flash in December 10th, and then it's going to wrap up with Arrow on January 14th, and Legends also on January 14th. So not only is that 5 episodes, that's 2 parts. So this is also doubling as the midseason cliffhanger for all the shows as well, it seems.
Right. It would seem, well, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe the cliffhangers for the first 3, and maybe the second half of the season debut for Legends and Arrow, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, could be. Now, here's the list of the characters that we know, and we heard some of these before, but we'll repeat them just for simplicity's sake. We know we're getting Brandon Routh as Superman again. Whether or not this is going to be his version that was in Superman Returns, and thus the Christopher Reeve Superman, we don't know. I don't think it really matters in the grand scheme of things. And, of course, we've heard the rumors that it may be the Kingdom Come Superman.
We don't need to go down that rabbit hole again. We've covered that on a previous episode.
Right. Obviously, Tyler Hoechlin will be back. Elizabeth Tulloch as Lois will be back. They have their baby soups that they got in this past season of Supergirl. We're getting Lex in some capacity. I don't know what Lex it would be, because I think Crisis of Infinite Earths in the books, I think that was the first time we got a depiction of Lex Luthor as a good guy, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that was the first time. You're talking about the one from Earth.
I think it was Earth 3, I want to say.
I want to say that's the one that has the crime syndicate, is the evil version of the Justice League, like Superwoman, Owlman, that mm-hmm. one, right?
Right.
I think you're right. The Joker is the jokester in that world. He's a good guy, if I remember mm-hmm. right.
Right. And I know you recently got the DC service train, but if you can look up Crisis on Two Worlds, which is an adaptation of the
excellent movie. Has one of my favorite lines ever as a Batman guy. First off, they had James Woods.
Yes.
voicing the evil, you know, version of Batman, you know, the evil Bruce Wayne, Batman, Owlman in that world. And then Kevin Conroy doing the voice of the good guy, Batman. And they have that great fight at the end where Batman, this is such a Bruce Wayne Batman line, where he grabs Owlman after he's almost got him beat, pulls him in really close, and said, "You're right, but you're wrong. We are the same. We both looked into the abyss. The difference is you blinked." I just think that's mm-hmm. a great, I can't do a Kevin Conroy voice, but that I'm going, that is so Batman. You have no understanding if you understand the history of that character. That is so Batman. Yeah. We right. both looked into the abyss. You blinked. Right. And, like, that's yeah. incredible.
And speaking of Kevin Conroy, we're getting him live action portraying Bruce Wayne. Now, I can't see a version of Bruce Wayne coming without a Batman attached. So, of course, that leads to speculation. Is this going to be Kingdom Come Batman? Is it going to be Batman Beyond Bruce Wayne? I really don't care. I think anything that has Kevin Conroy having any sort of connection to Batman in a live action production after all this time, it was like when we watched Supergirl and we got Martian Manhunter, and then they had the actor from the cartoon series playing his father. Yeah, that was such an excellent cast. I kind of look at it in that regard.
I you know, of course, I've spoke at length about my love of Kingdom Come and that storyline. I would like to see that one. I think he can pull that one off. You and me have talked before here on multiple episodes that when Kevin Conroy was rising to fame as the voice of Batman in the 90s, he was the right age. He could have done a live action. He was old. He was the right age. He was the right size. He was good looking guy
too. Yeah.
Acting chops. Now he's older. He's lost some weight. He's not as bulky as he used to be. I want to see him personally because of, I know he could pull it off because he's already done it. And two, the possibilities it opens. I want to see him as older, grizzled Batman beyond Bruce Wayne, because then that leaves the door open for, well, where's Terry? You know?
Right. Exactly.
And I don't know what all titles you read in your comics. The Batman Beyond comic book is really pretty good. You know, I actually like it.
I haven't read the comic. I have seen some of the TV episodes, and my sister's a big fan. But they did such a good job with that, because when I first heard about Batman Beyond, I'm like, oh man, the sci-fi updates, these things never work. And then, you know, I watched like the first two episodes. And I'm like, yep, I'm hooked. And to me, you know, you talked about one of your favorite Batman moments. One of mine is actually when I think they did the crossover. It was a Justice League episode where they went into the future.
That was the backdoor, like, pilot to the show and explained the origins of Terry and Bruce, quite frankly.
Yeah, but they did the thing where it was one of the thugs in the future, and I think it's like Superman tries to rough him up and it doesn't flinch him, and then even Batman tries something. And then, you know, however he is, 70, 80-year-old Bruce Wayne steps up and says, oh, gosh, you kids. And then it fades to black. And then it comes back, and the thug is just bawling his eyes out in terror. They don't show what they did, but they kind of didn't have to.
I can't remember if it was that same episode, but it was a Justice League episode that involved Amanda Waller as well. I think it was another one, because I think it was a younger Amanda Waller in this episode. But it's a great Batman moment where Batman is basically telling Amanda to back off with you know, Cadmus and Task Force X/Suicide Squad need to back off and let him in particular, but the Justice League in general handle this. And Amanda looks right at him and says, you need to check yourself. And he's like, why would you say that? She goes, well, how have you been spending your night, rich boy? And the way the artists draw, because if you know that whole run of Batman, the animated series, and just they drew Batman as this blank, blunted effect, never showed any kind of emoted, any kind of facial. He actually showed some. She was like, whoa, she knows that. There are so many great Batman moments that I could go. We could do a whole episode on, but that's one of my favorites. Just like, where you been spending your nights, rich boy? And he's like, whoa.
We'll save that for our own 80th anniversary Batman show, I guess.
All right.
All right. But we are getting Black Lightning in some capacity. I don't know how big of a role he'll play. Maybe it's a Black Lightning from another Earth.
We are getting Cress Williams.
Yes.
Though,
it is Cress. He was the one that kind of, whether inadvertently or not, kind of spilled the beans on it, I think.
Funny thing, with you mentioning earlier that I've just recently gotten the DC Online. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, to cheap plug here, I will be reviewing the app and what I think of the service provided in a future episode. But it's weird in some of the newer movies, which I actually like. It started in 2018, or sorry, really started like it was 2015 with Son of Batman, which is the Damian Wayne origin story, and leads through Batman versus Robin, and the most recents have been The Death of Superman, The Reign of the Superman, and the one that just dropped this week, which is Batman Hush. In those, and also in the new Young Justice series that they have on the show, which is a continuation of the old series, Cress Williams actually voices Cyborg, because they have Kari Payton voicing Black Lightning. I was like, huh? and it's confusing to me, because I can close my eyes for a second, hear the voices, and I have to open my eyes and see what's actually see it. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen, it can be very confusing if you're a diehard comic geek like me. I'm like, what?
I can relate to that watching Justice League and knowing people who love Smallville, because Michael Rosenbaum voiced Flash, and then, of course, he played Lex Luthor on Smallville. So, you know,
exactly. Who was the young actor who played Ollie in Smallville? Justin Hartley. That's it. My girlfriend is a massive Stephen Amell fan, and she loves Arrow now. But it took her almost a whole season to get over Amell as Oliver Queen because she was a devout Smallville fan. She's like, he's just not my... I was like, give him time. I think he's okay. Mm-hmm. She came around eventually. You know, the I think she was much like Felicity when he would do the Solomon ladder with no shirt on. That kind of converted her.
Right.
the salmon ladder. But I think that can help convert her. But I mean, it's one of those cases, to refer back to our last segment. Give things a chance sometimes. Yep. Maybe it's not for you, and you might actually not. You don't have to be cutting backflips over it, but you might not dislike it either. You know.
Right. Right. Now, the other names that we've actually already heard of, we know Burt Ward is going to be in some capacity. I think we all kind of presume it's an older Robin.
LaMonica. So I wonder, sorry to cut you off, will they have Burt Ward, and I'm assuming he's playing Dick Grayson. That's been confirmed, right?
I don't think it's been confirmed, but I can't see him being anything other than an older Dick Grayson.
Well, if they want to go the route you're talking about and an older Adam West and Burt Ward, they could put him with Kevin Conroy, and that could be what we see.
Right. Yeah, that would make sense.
That would be an aging Bruce Wayne, aging great Dick Grayson, who are somehow still keeping the peace in their Gotham, you know, right. Or their Gotham and Bloodhaven, for that matter.
We got LaMonica Garrett doing double duty as the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor. And as we discussed, Tom Cavanaugh will be playing Pariah, who is kind of the catalyst of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we'll get other names. I get the feeling with CW and with Berlanti and all these guys, we're probably going to get a few surprises. So, right. You know, stuff that they're not going to tell us.
We know that Arrow's ending. This is its last season coming up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a season 8. I'm beginning to wonder if there are not going to be others that fall behind. My gut feeling says Berlanti and Guggenheim and these guys kind of want to move on to other things. I think this world has kind of had its shelf life, you know. I mean, Smallville ran for what, like 9 seasons?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, 10, I think, yeah.
And I think what Lois and Clark on ABC ran for like 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. Comic book stuff is, as much as we love it, because you're gathering from so many source materials, you're putting what is essentially maybe sometimes a year's worth of comic book story, sometimes multi-years worth of comic book storylines into an hour or two. They're going to run out of original material, or at least stuff that they can lean on to have original material. I just get this gut feeling this crossover might be impactful to the point where it leads to some of these other series winding down and maybe going away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see that. I mean, you texted me earlier this week, said that it's been confirmed Matt Ryan is returning next season to be in Legends again as John Constantine.
Right.
Yes. I'm so happy about that. But it you know, everything has a shelf life. Even Gunsmoke went off the air eventually. Doctor Who seems to be the only show that can avoid that. And even they were off the air for, what, 15, 20 years in the gap?
Yeah. And the main gimmick with Doctor Who is the entire cast changes every few years, you know?
Right. Right. Exactly. And so it's everything in television has a shelf life. I mean, Walter Cronkite retired. I mean, it is what it is, you know?
Right.
And I just get a feeling you're going for this heavy of a storyline with what we're hearing and all the stops are pulling out. Am I wrong in thinking that?
No, not at all. And anybody who knows the Crisis story in the comics knows that Barry Allen and Kara both die in it. Now, granted, it's a, you know, condensing of the worlds into one. The whole reason they did it was to get fresh and coherent continuity for everybody. And, spoiler alert, Barry didn't actually die. He was just stuck in the Speed Force for about 20 years and came out 20 years later in Infinite Crisis.
We always bring up the whole Frank Castle Punisher proof of death comic book death. I heard even a better one earlier this week. There's two kinds of deaths in comic books. There's the Uncle Ben death, which sticks, and then every other one. I think that's actually a pretty good analogy, don't you?
Yeah, it is.
I don't see Uncle Ben coming back. Like I said, I even tried to think one, well, Thomas Wayne, look, he's Batman in another universe. So even Thomas Wayne came back. So
right.
it's Uncle Ben and every other death. That's the only kind of deaths there are in comic. And I wouldn't be surprised to talk, you know, kind of to coattail on what I was saying earlier. Maybe, and I think you've even mentioned this before in an episode, maybe with this being the end of the run of Arrow, maybe Ollie gets that heroic death as opposed to Barry in this storyline, and that's how they wrap up that series.
Could be, yeah.
I mean, I think with Oliver and Arrow being the foundation of this shared universe, I think we're both in agreement. However Ollie goes out, it's going to be heroic. You know, he's either going to throw himself on the hand grenade and save the world, or he's going to truly make it known in our eyes that Star City is safe and he can go off and ride off in the sunset, you know, once upon a time, forever and ever. Amen. That kind
of
thing.
Right.
It's going to be one of the two. He's going to get the heroic ending, though. We agree on that.
I would be disappointed if we get anything less. Now, the last thing I wanted to touch base on, this is somewhat related to Crisis. I don't know if we'll get any sort of backdoor pilot or anything like that, but it is going around that when Arrow ends, CW is looking for another DC property to take its place. Now, granted, we're getting Batwoman already, so you could make the argument that...
And this will be, what, season 3 or 4 of Black Lightning? 3?
Yeah, something like, yeah. But I've heard nothing more than rumors. I haven't really heard... The one I like the most, and I'm kind of breaking my own rule when it comes to rumors here, but I'll preface it by saying I haven't seen it on the sites that I truly trust. Yeah. But I just remember hearing a while back about Berlanti having an idea for Booster Gold. And that's one of the names that I'd heard going around. And I absolutely would watch the heck out of a Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, like space buddy superhero cop movie or TV show. You know.
Well, you know, if they bring Kevin Conroy in and they go the route I'm talking about, I'm down for a Batman Beyond.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
But I think Batman as an intellectual property is just a little bigger than. But then again, they gave him Superman, so who knows? Mm-hmm. Right. But he's not a regular character. He's a recurring cameo type character, you know. Right. And I don't want, for all you out there, want to jump down my throat. Don't take this the wrong way. I love Supergirl, but Kara is not even close to being on the same level in the fans' eyes and comic experts' eyes with Clark. She's just not.
Right.
I don't care how many of Superman stories they adapt and flip them so that they're her stories in that show. She's not. Sorry. Right. There's the holy trinity of Diana, Bruce, and Clark, and everybody else is below them, period, in the DC world. I think that we can definitely.
Absolutely. Now, and Titans, if I recall correctly, has Berlanti's name on it. I just don't think it's necessarily part of.
He's an executive producer. And with the timbre and language and violence in that show, it has an MA rating. I don't, with it being one of the keystones to the DC online streaming service, I don't see them moving it to a over the air broadcast personally.
Right. I agree.
I mean, and at my understanding, and I enjoyed it, this swamp thing, and I'm not quite done with it yet. I think Swamp Thing was like only one season, you know? So if there's this thought of bringing in maybe a Justice League Dark, I don't think it includes Swamp Thing, you know? So maybe it could. But the three big original shows that they really build themselves on, now it's four, are Young Justice, which is animated, then three live action shows, which are Swamp Thing, Titans, and Doom Patrol. And so I don't see with the success of those three live action and the timbre all three of them have, because I've watched all three now that I have them, I don't see any of them coming over, even though Berlanti is Titan. He is the executive producer of Titans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see it.
Right.
I mean, it's like they're already making enough money off the royalties and whatever the deal is they have with, you know, I mean, they obviously remember CW is owned, half is owned by Warner Brothers and the other half is owned by, I can't remember, Paramount maybe. So they already own half of these characters. I'm sure they're still getting a big check from the other 50% of CW for the right to use these characters. They're making money on both. They're not going to mess that up. You follow what I'm saying?
Right. All right, well, we're going to wrap up with that. This has been episode 242 of Geekville Radio. Once again, geekvilleradio.com. We are Geekville Radio on all the social medias. Well, I shouldn't say all, both. Facebook and Twitter, you can find us.
Yeah, we're old farts. We don't have Instagram yet. Right. We probably need to look into that, but I digress.
Yeah, it's actually something I'm looking into because I've been putting up links with pictures to past shows for anybody that wants to look into some of the past shows we have without having to go through an episode list. So yeah, Instagram may come in the future and you can talk to us at geekvilleradio.com as well, because we have a discuss comment section, any type of social media works there. And Crazy Train, if anybody wants to talk to you about any of this stuff, where can they find you?
I can always find me on Twitter @CrazyTrain_JB. I am currently working on a new playlist My Spotify called Chicks That Rock. I think that kind of gives you an idea of what the theme and where I'm going with that playlist. When I get it completed, I'll share that link with y'all on that on the next episode once I've got it completed.
Right. Sounds like a plan. This has been Geekville Radio. We'll talk to you again next time. Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any product or company unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests are purely their own and do not represent the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, A1-Wrestling.com, or any affiliates. Some media used on Geekville Radio is the respective copyright of its publishers, all rights reserved. And, you know, this whole thing with Flash dying in Crisis and how they've been foreshadowing it since the first episode of the first season. I'm telling people, it's like, look, Flash has an entire sixth season to go through. Do you really think they're going to permanently kill off the Flash on a show called The Flash and continue to call it The Flash?
Just look at him and go, Uncle Ben death. That's all, you know.